Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week, we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. This week, our subject is theology and the topic, Quo Vadis, Reason. Today, we welcome our distinguished panel of experts, host of EWTN Radio's Call to Communion, Dr. David Anders. Welcome. EWTN Senior Theology Advisor, Noah Lett, and EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan, who's always on the program with me. And thank you so much for you guys joining us here on the program and making the time to talk about this very interesting topic. Welcome. Thank you. So, you know, Colin, when you first suggested this and I heard Quo Vadis, I said, well, I'm a film buff. I thought this would be great, you know. It's got a great score, and Robert Taylor and Deborah Carr, wonderful. Peter Ustinov did a wonderful bit as Nero in this, but it's not. You're talking about Quo Vadis, reason. Well, what do we mean when we say Quo Vadis? What does that even mean, and sure. Why are we focused on reason?
Well, the title is a reference to the story which is in the church's tradition with a little T, and that is that Peter was preparing to flee Rome during the persecution of Nero, and he met Christ on the road. He said, "Where go, Lord? Where are you going? Whither goest thou? Quo Vadis?" And so, in that context, or actually, it was Peter asked Christ this question because he was going in the direction of Rome. He says, "I'm going to Rome, going to be crucified again," and Peter turned around and went to his own death.
Right.
So, the idea of the title is that we've certainly abandoned Christ in the West, and we've gone so far down the slippery slope of thinking that we're now abandoning reason on different things. And part of it is a disagreement as to what constitutes discovery of the truth and what constitutes truth itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we've dealt with, in Catholic spheres, with different programs having to do with gender ideology, with other aspects of the culture. We have one airing that has to do with the critical theory. Mm-hmm. And so this is the basic question of what is the nature of truth, what is reason, mm-hmm. and what is the as flows from that then is what is the nature of man. Because this is where the arguments are at today. Mm-hmm. We tend to judge everything by the scientific standards. Well, we know what man is, and you can give a thorough scientific description. You can give certain kinds of philosophical mm-hmm. descriptions as well. But really, who and what is man? And that's the question that has to be answered to get out of the morass that we're in today.
Okay. Noah, let me ask you. AI would tell us that in philosophy, reason refers to the capacity for logical thought, judgment, the ability to form conclusions based on evidence and argumentation, and that reason is often contrasted with other ways of knowing, such as intuition, emotion, or faith. And that's what's interesting, because Colin was talking about reason, he was talking about truth, but what does reason have to do with our faith? Aren't we Catholics? We just believe, right?
Every human being learns by reason and trust. There's no education department ever existed in the world that only operated by saying, you know what, do all the experiments and only those that you can do yourself should you believe. That would be reason. But no, we have to trust. Mm-hmm. We have to trust the professor knows what they're talking about. We have to trust the books that they're given. By using the word faith, we make people think that we're talking about something special and mm-hmm. different than what is ordinarily the case for the education of the human person. There is no person that would like to have only reason or only faith. The human person needs both reason and trust. So we have to trust our teachers, I repeat again. We have to trust the books that they choose for us to read through, because I'm not going to personally check the book and vet it to make sure that it's good and right. I'm the student coming in, and I take what they give me.
Mm-hmm.
The same. So when we talk about the church telling us that this is what we believe, this is the catechism and so forth, I do have to trust the church. I do have to believe that what they're telling me is really what Christ has to say. And I can use reason to see that they're trustworthy in doing it. Reason would say, I shouldn't trust any bum who told me about theology. I mm-hmm. should trust somebody who has a record of talking about it good, like David Anders there.
All right. Speaking of Dr. Anders, After reading the AI, I noticed that you talk about the idea that Newman believed that people evaluate rational arguments using pre-rational intuitions about true, good, and beautiful. Well, how can you use those kind of emotional intuition things to find something that's reason? How do those two connect in your mind?
So, you know, I like to take everything back ultimately to the example of Christ. And one of the things that strikes me about Jesus' teaching, you know, one of his primary admonitions is to take the log out of one's own eye before one takes the splinter out of one's neighbor. And a lot of his parables, a lot of his provocations, I think, were designed to help wake people up to the degree to which they were kind of captured by their own ideological commitments, their own self-conception. He wanted to sort of shake them up and help them to see that they weren't all that. And one of my favorite examples is the parable of the Good Samaritan. And naively, we might think the parable of the Good Samaritan is about the moral maxim, well, you should be nice to strangers. But the Pharisees already knew that. The Old Testament taught very clearly the mandate of being kind to strangers. And what you really understand from the parable is Christ was helping them to see that they were not, in fact, being kind to strangers. It wasn't just laying out a moral maxim. It was helping them come to the realization that they weren't, in fact, living up to it. They failed to recognize this about themselves. And it's a constant theme throughout the New Testament that we need to be woken up. You know, St. Paul says that without the Spirit of God, we can't understand the things of God. And so, you know, Newman's argument is that you can't just come to somebody with rational arguments as if you could prove the elements of the faith by rational deduction. Something, in fact, the First Vatican Council says, if you think you can prove the elements of faith by rational deduction, you're actually outside the faith because there's elements that surpass reason. And that, that you do want to appeal to their deductive logic, but you also have to help them have a sensibility transformation where they can come to appreciate, say, the dignity of the other, the extent to which they themselves may not be all that. And that without that sensibility transcendence, arguments for the truth will not land. And this is what Newman called the illative sense, the ability to actually step back and evaluate the larger picture to see where I fit within that.
Right. Well, Colin, let me ask you, you know, because sometimes people think about, you know, reason being very cold. You know, the cold reason, these are the hard facts of things, and they don't take these other things that Dr. Anders was talking about into account. How does the church deal with bringing those together, that faith and reason?
Well, the church does it by employing all kinds of tools. Noah alluded to this as well, that one of the tools, of course, is our own intellect, which wants to know truth in a certain fashion. And this is an area where there is a principal difficulties of conception today in this. Today, as I noted earlier in the introduction, is the truth is sometimes reduced to simply a material knowledge of reality. And that's important. But I think there's a concept that goes back to about 2,300 years to the philosopher Aristotle, which has been foundational in the West. That is that the intellect of the human being is capacitated to know truth by knowing reality. And so by our experience of reality, we abstract from that reality something that could be categorically said about it. This is a man, this is a dog, this is a typewriter, this is alive, this is dead, this is life, living or waking, this is dreaming. And so we have all of this capacity built within us. But we have a different view being promulgated today, which reduces it to the scientific, as is the scientific knowledge of the material properties of things is the greatest category of knowledge, and it isn't. We carry the insights of our human nature around with us, but we're not reflecting on them in any consistent way. What the church has done differently over the centuries is to have a practice of reflecting on that using the mental capacity that God has given us in the soul, our intellectual capacity, reflecting on that and drawing conclusions about the nature of reality and the nature of man, something the baby is able to do and progressively grows in the knowledge of as it develops through the different stages of life. And so we have to do likewise. You know, and so like David was saying, the church knows that there are certain things we can't know in this way. And those are the revealed things. And so there we rely on supernatural faith, which is a dispositive grace of that God gives us so that the intellect will bow to truths that it doesn't know by means of simply reality, mm-hmm. the Trinity, the Eucharist, and other matters. And so the church has developed over the centuries a systematic way of looking at reality so that each thing has its proper place. The things mm-hmm. revealed by God, the things which we can discover through our intellect, we would call that philosophy, the love of wisdom, mm-hmm. the love of what we can discover that way. And then also you have material reality, certainly, which can be integrated into that. And the church has demonstrated over the centuries a very wonderful capacity to develop an integrated knowledge of reality from all these different frames of reference. That's been totally abandoned today. And it's been abandoned in favor of these subjective categories, like everything is material. If you're an atheist or agnostic, you don't believe in the spiritual things, then everything is material to you, and that's all I have to regard. There are other kinds of egotisms as well. The egotism which says that I am so unique that everything I discover about mm-hmm. myself is all that I need to know to guide every step in my life. Mm-hmm. And so you get the various ideologies that are basically kinds of, you know, right. statements about oneself and what one deserves from the world and what the world should right. give you and so on.
Virtual solipsism kind of
right.
situation.
And so this is why our title is Quo Vadis Reason. This right. has all come about by abandoning that integrated right. approach to discovery of truth that the church possessed in her long tradition.
Well, Colin lost me a typewriter, but let me ask you, now since most of our audience doesn't know what that is anymore, but Noah, let me ask you, one of the points that Colin was making all of a sudden, talking about, you know, Plato and Aristotle and attaining knowledge, and one of the things we're dealing with today, which you've talked about, is that the modern scientific molecular approach as an illustration of going beyond man's senses, where we used to be able to rely on our senses, with the kind of molecular world we live in, but now in the virtual reality world, where we're sitting there watching videos that have been created totally out of nothing through AI, how do we reason what is true?
I'm going to step you back even to a more deeper problem than the one you point out. Mm-hmm. You can typically hear on television, especially Nova science programs, that you should not trust your senses, that they can't see through illusions. They will say to you, you know, your senses, you put your hand on your chest and they'll say, see, your hand makes you think that you're feeling something solid. But they'll say, no, in reality, you have some atoms and a lot of space that you're made of, and your senses don't tell you that. So see how your senses do not put you in touch with the reality that's really there. Mm-hmm. So you should think about reality the way that our machines and technology tell you about persons and things. Again, that they are atoms and mostly space. And so you end up thinking to yourself, yeah, I shouldn't trust. It's like in the 1984, remember when Winston is being brought back into the society, mm-hmm. they have him on a table and they ask him how many fingers, remember? And mm-hmm. he says four, and they shock him pretty fiercely. And then they ask him again how many fingers, and he says four louder, thinking they didn't hear him. But then they ask him again how many fingers, and in his fevered mind, he says three, and they don't shock him. You know, they had four fingers up.
Right.
And they say, how many fingers? And he says, oh, 20, and they don't shock him. And what they want him to do is to not think about what his senses tell him, but to think first, what does this state want him to think about what he's seeing? Mm-hmm. And to take that as how he's going to interact with reality. That's 1984. Right. It's not much different than what we have right. now, because you're being told to think about people only in terms of atoms and molecules and their quanta. And all this other stuff is thought to be somehow illusions. Like, they'll even tell you that colors don't really exist. It's just chemical reactions in your eyes.
Right.
And, you know, this is false.
Right, absolutely. And that's a kind of the cancel culture we're dealing with as well. I think we're coming out of it with that idea that one can't say which is clearly the emperor's new clothes in front of you. You have to act like what everybody wants to believe is
yes.
what's going on. Dr. Anders, you talk about in today's society especially, there's a lot of cognitive biases, especially in how we deal with reasoning. How does that relate to Catholics trying to live out their faith?
Yeah, well, I think it relates very much to what I was saying earlier about the teaching of Jesus. One of the things that modern cognitive science and modern psychology has really discovered, and I think we can benefit from as Catholics, is the extent to which humans have different modes of reasoning depending on the context that they're in. There was a famous book called Thinking Fast and Slow by Kahneman and Tversky that identified this distinction. And our sort of intuitive heuristic ways of making decisions, you know, on the sly, on the quick, don't follow analytical sort of deductive patterns. And they have habits that are pretty much universal. Everybody has them, and they sort of construct the way we think about arguments. And a good example would be, say, like what we've all heard of confirmation bias, right? Mm-hmm. The tendency that people have to seek out evidence that confirms their hypothesis rather than otherwise. Now, you know, that has some adaptive advantages in a very narrow context, because look, it's not practical for me in life to literally investigate every possible alternative to every decision, and conservatism as a sort of natural disposition is efficient, but it can sort of run you smack dab against reality. I mean, if I have a heuristic that's a shortcut method for making decisions about investments, mm-hmm. eventually, if it doesn't work, I'm going to lose a lot of money, right? And reality is going to teach me better. But the ability to overcome those cognitive biases, it really requires a person to step back, take a third person point of view. And you know, one thing that I like about St. Thomas's teaching on reasoning, a practical application, his mm-hmm. teaching on the virtue of prudence, which is really the good use, the habit of using one's rational capacities well for decision making. When he talks about what goes into prudent decision making, one of the things that Thomas highlights is docility, my ability to take counsel and listen to other people, to seek out other points of view, not to be in love with my own cognitive bias, if you will, not to be in love with my perspective. And you know, there's a big difference between intelligence, rationality, and wisdom. Mm-hmm. And you can find a lot of highly intelligent people that believe very absurd things. You know, the conspiracy theorist, for example, is somebody that can spin you a really brilliant web of absolute nonsense. Mm-hmm. But their capacity to step back and question their premises is very little, because it threatens their identity, you know, their sense of purpose and meaning and belonging, their status in society. And those are the things that we don't want to give up.
Right. Unfortunately, it seems like some of those conspiracy theories are coming more true than some of us actually thought they were. In the coming days, we'll know. Colin, you talked about the find that historically from 300 BC, which I'm assuming you talk about the Greek philosophers, to 1600, philosophy answered the question about reason. What changed?
Well, what changed was, on the one hand, the Reformation abandoning the tradition of the church with respect to interpreting scripture and really all of Christian history up to 1600. Or 1517 in some cases. And so there's that abandonment, but then there's the philosophical abandonment of just general thinkers, not theological thinkers necessarily, although often they crossed disciplines, where Descartes and his methodical doubt. In other words, you should doubt, you should basically be prepared to doubt anything in order to get to the truth. And that means that there was really nothing consistently that you could adhere to. So that progress in philosophy, the understanding of the nature of being and the nature of reality and epistemology, which is the way we think, all of these philosophical disciplines, which has sort of come together first with Plato and Aristotle and then developed in the church, you have different streams of that, and really brought together in scholasticism by Aquinas and many other thinkers during the period from the 1600s. And so that tradition of thinking and integrating scientific knowledge, reality such as, say, a mathematician, or today we would divide the disciplines up into biology and geology and physics and all of those kinds of things. Then they didn't really think that way. So, but that scientific knowledge, together with the knowledge of man, of the human knowledge, the human sciences, and the philosophical knowledge, the knowledge about the natures of things, the nature of being, the nature of existence, and so on. Those things could all be integrated, and the medievals did that very well, and Descartes and others came along and threw a hand grenade into that and blew it all up. And what we end up finding after that is philosophers went different ways. Some became very materialistic, some became very idealistic. And so this is if the realistic look at the world is in the middle, these are the two extremes to which the human personality can go. Everything is sort of in the mind, or everything is in the matter, and that's the way it went. And so in the 20th century, people started thinking about this and applying it and dealing with it. And my personal favorite in this is a couple people, Dietrich von Hildebrand, who mm-hmm. was trained by Edmund Husserl, and John Paul II, who took some basic insights that what was called personalism and those schools that Husserl fostered, although he didn't subscribe to their thinking, mm-hmm. people like Dietrich von Hildebrand, as I mentioned, and Edith Stein. Mm-hmm. He took that and he tried to integrate the modern human sciences and approach to that. And he came up with very firm rules on how to do that. Mm-hmm. And that is the modern sciences, the studies of cognitive sciences David talked about, the social sciences. These things can be valuable and contribute to the understanding of man. And the church needs that understanding in her pastoral work. And so in doing that, what ought to be the things that guide people? Mm-hmm. And he said, if you base things on simply the emotions as discovered, or the values in reality as discovered by the emotions, then everything goes awry, and he describes a spinning off into emotionalism and different kinds of things.
Right.
So the church must use this with a good solid metaphysics, meaning the philosophy of being, a good solid anthropology, meaning the philosophy of man, and a good solid personalism or subjective philosophy, which looks at human behavior and takes out of that what appears to be objectively true. But the ultimate standard which the Catholic must go by is what God has revealed in the teaching of the church. Mm-hmm. So if you do any kind of philosophy without reference to what has been revealed, then it's going to go wrong somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that was his basic point. And we see that in the church in moral theology, especially with things right. condemned by John Paul in Veritatis Splendor. You see it continuing today in different ways, where people want to base everything more on what they sense and feel about themselves and the world around them mm-hmm. than on what is actual in the consensus of humanity for 2,300 years, and also what God himself has revealed. And the Catholic, absolutely. That has to be the absolute and final standard.
Right. I don't remember Jesus taking a vote of the apostles on exactly what the teachings were going to be,
but
as I recall.
But the church can integrate these things. That's the key point, I think.
Right. Well, Noah, let me ask you. You know, Colin was talking about these highfalutin terms in there and everything. Meanwhile, we're trying to deal with a population that they say young people can't find the Pacific Ocean on a map. So exactly how do we get these high-level concepts brought down to something the average person can understand?
With great difficulty, mm-hmm. because the culture is against us, mm-hmm. and it has so many tools at its disposal that we use very poorly, like the media, like social media, and all these things. They've taken over the institutions of learning, even the Catholic ones. I think the way we have to do it is by evangelism, because Jesus Christ is the only quote, thing that is contrary to the world. And the gospel of Jesus Christ is able to change a person's point of view and make them interested in learning and make them aware that Jesus Christ as a real person who is God in the flesh, and not think about him as mere atoms, or to think about him as somebody whose consciousness is only derived from his material mind. No, he's God in the flesh. I've met him, I know him, and he becomes the standard. I've heard so many testimonies of people who were confused, were without Christ, their mind was all in a jumble, and they meet Christ and things change. Mm-hmm. And that's how we have to do it. We can try to get good institutions where we have good curriculum like the ones that Ratzinger talked about in Regensburg. You know, you can try to get that, mm-hmm. but you only get there by having the gospel be the thing you tell the world, because that will change them from the thing they're caught in. We have to do evangelism.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, Dr. Anders, with dealing with people out there and all the philosophical discussions that are going on there. One of the things that struck me when you were talking about people and what they believe, I was thinking of church shopping, how many times you find, I think, in some product places where people say, well, I end up having to find a church that basically agrees with me. And that's really what I'm looking for. And sometimes for Catholics, we run into an issue where people say, well, I believe in the church's reason, but what they're saying is unreasonable. What's the difference?
You know, I'd like to bring the conversation back a little bit to where Colin started, which is that we have an innate capacity, God-given capacity as beings made in God's likeness and image, to recognize the truth of reality. And you asked, Noah, how can we get these highfalutin concepts down to the common person? And I think it's more of a question of how can we get the common person to recognize reality that's staring them in the face. Not everybody has to be a philosopher, but everybody has to deal with reality as it's put in front of us. And we can get blinded by our philosophical paradigms, our ideological commitments, our family environment. You know, Colin mentioned earlier the effect of the Reformation on the destruction of the trust in reason. And I was raised in a tradition like that. I was raised in a fundamentalist Protestant tradition that said, you know, if my sect's interpretation of Scripture conflicted with reality, well, then so much the worse for reality. Mm-hmm. And for me, the discovery of the Catholic faith, one of the things that drew me to Catholicism was the permission it gave me to trust reason and my engagement with reality, and that when I've experienced things genuinely as good, true, and beautiful, I could step back and say, "My gosh, they're good, true, and beautiful." I wasn't at odds with my own interiority anymore. And so, you know, you don't just do this in a philosophy classroom. You do this in a family. You do this in a scout troop. You do this pretty much every place except the internet, right? I mean, you engage people in the stuff of reality and its goodness, its truth, and beauty, and you hold it up in front of them, hold up the loam from your soil, and you tell a child, this is good, bury your hands in it, it came from God.
Well, unfortunately, bots aren't very reasonable. Let me ask you, Colin, in the last minute and a half we hear, if you'd like to just wrap this up for us.
Yeah, I think we've all been saying around the same things in the sense that today, people have a little world that's around them, and it's hard to break into it because it fits the parameters of what they want, what they believe, what they feel they need. The beauty, I think, of what both Noah and David suggested about the gospel is grace is ultimately the only thing that can break through this. So evangelization is key to this. And it's very encouraging that in recent years there has been a greater appreciation of the Catholic intellectual life, and you see that in different people, very people who are intellectually active, who convert to the faith, who show what it is like when you discover what the church has intellectually, and you realize there's nothing that I can learn through science or the human sciences and truly know, and know that is true, that will ever conflict with the Catholic faith, because the church has a native ability to integrate all knowledge within herself, and she's been doing it, and she will continue to do it.
Absolutely. All the pieces fit together amazingly. Yeah. And thank you, Dr. Anders. Thank you, Noah Lett, and of course, Colin Donovan, for being with us today. And of course, thank you for joining us, and don't forget to join us next week when the host on this program will be Ryan Penny. He'll be discussing Catholics on social media, a very important subject. That's right here on the Catholic Sphere. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.